You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Richard Shippen, teacher at the Delta Academy. April is National Financial Capability Month, which raises awareness about the importance of financial literacy education. And fittingly, Richard teaches a financial literacy course for high school students at the Delta Academy. So he's here to provide some tips for parents and teens on financial success. Rich, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So for listeners who aren't familiar, what exactly is the Delta Academy?
Delta Academy is a charter school up in North Las Vegas. It is a 6th grade to 12th grade school. So we have middle school and high school, and we offer day school and online school. So it's pretty flexible.
Okay. And your financial literacy course is specifically for the high school students, not middle school?
Yes, I teach high school. Financial literacy is a 9th grade course. But we also have a 12th grade course that kind of goes over what they might have learned in 9th grade. But yeah, the 9th grade course is a mandatory course for all high school students.
Wow, that's awesome. So what do students learn in the financial literacy course?
The course is really divided up into 4 parts. There's career planning. So they take surveys and different tests, I guess, and they, based off of their interests, they find a career. You know, it doesn't mean that's what they're going to go with, but it shows what they might be interested in. We also have a budgeting portion of the course. So different stages of life, your budgeting might be different, but, and then depending on your job or circumstances in life. So we go over that. There's credit and loans. So we have all sorts of credit, you know, whether it be your credit card or whether it be a mortgage. And the last part of the course is entrepreneurship and investment. So starting a business and saving money and that. So we kind of hit a lot of different financial topics.
Yeah, that sounds very comprehensive. So why is it important for students to learn about financial responsibility?
Well, I always say if you're independent, then you really can live your life. So you get to enjoy yourself more if you're financially responsible. And it affects everyone. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. You have to learn financial responsibility. So some people never do. So it's good to have this in schools at such a young age.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that it's mandatory is fantastic because I always wonder, I've been wondering this for years, why don't more schools teach financial literacy?
Yeah, it's something that's catching on now. I'm a math teacher, so I teach pre-calc and algebra 2, and I really love, you know, I'm one of those people that really do like math, but a lot of it you really don't see in life if, you know, if you're not in the engineering or the business fields. Financial responsibility, though, is a math that you'll see, you know, no matter what you end up doing, you'll have to be able to know this. So it's good that it's mandatory.
Yeah. Now, math is, for a lot of kids, not exactly their favorite topic. I hate to break the news if you weren't aware of that. But on the other hand, finances, yes, it's math, but it's also fun because it's money, right? Everybody loves money. So what do you find is the difference between the way that students interact in your regular math classes as opposed to the financial literacy classes?
Yeah, and of course, it varies, but I think generally speaking, the students want to learn about money and they want to, you know, they might be at home and everyone's got different situations, but they might want to be independent. So they're way more willing to learn the financial literacy. I find that students will say, oh, I suck at math, but this kind of math, though, I don't suck at. So right. I think the real life application goes a long way for this course.
Nice. Okay. So what are some financial tips you can give to our listeners that we should keep in mind during Financial Capability Month?
So I think you need to first understand how to live within your means, something I didn't really stick to when I graduated from college. You get your job and you think, I have money to do whatever I want now, but you still have to live within your means. And that includes, related to that, but another tip I would have is that your debt is not insurmountable. You might have stacked up whatever it may be, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000. There are things you can do in your life, adjustments that you can make to knock that debt down. And finally, I would start an emergency fund. You never know, a car accident might happen, your car might break down, your pet might get sick, your kid might get sick. It's important to have that emergency fund.
Yeah, now that is a tip that all the financial experts tell us, that we should have an emergency fund. And typically we hear that it should be 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses. But I find that a lot of people think that is very daunting, like to hear that, oh my God, I have to save up 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses. So when people are living paycheck to paycheck, or, you know, even have a little bit extra on each paycheck, that is kind of scary to think about the emergency fund. So how would you recommend people tackle that and actually end up with a healthy emergency fund?
Yeah, and it relates to that, how your debt's not insurmountable, because the way you would save up to pay off that debt is to make little adjustments in life, and that money could end up going to your emergency fund. So, for example, something as little as, you know, not going out for coffee every morning and making mm-hmm. coffee at home. If you think about a $6 beverage at Starbucks that you have 5 days a week, well, that's $30 a week, and that's $120 a month. So you can, I mean, that's just on Starbucks alone, or I hate to pick on Starbucks, but just going out to get coffee.
They're okay. We can use them as an example.
right. They're not going to come after me.
But, right. And they're not going to go under just because you suggested that people don't spend $6 on the coffee.
Exactly. But that's $120 a month on that coffee tax, I call it.
Yeah.
So maybe you shop at a different grocery store. I know most people don't shop at Whole Foods. I understand that. But perhaps shopping at a grocery store that's cheaper, not going out three times a week, maybe going out twice a week, and just little adjustments like that, it stacks up. You end up saving maybe just $300 a month, but over time you'll build that emergency fund up.
And then where do we put that, whatever it is, $300 a month or whatever, as we're saving it up, where do we put that so it actually is available as an emergency fund when an emergency comes along?
I actually have a separate account. I bank with one bank, but then I have a different bank, Ally Bank, I'll just put it out there, where the money is away from me, but also I can use it. So it's not in my checking account with Bank of America. It's in a separate account at Ally Bank. Or you can put it in an investment account and just not invest with it. You can still build interest off of that account. I know Charles Schwab or Robin Hood or whatever, they still give you interest on money that you don't use to invest. So the point is, I would have it in a separate account, whatever it may be, but one that you do have access to, even though it's separate.
Yeah, okay, that's a good idea. So what else do you teach the kids about financial planning besides starting an emergency fund, which of course is crucial, but what else can they do to plan for the future?
Yeah, so we go over budgeting. And like I said, the budgeting, I throw different scenarios at them. We go over budgeting if you were to go to college or a trade school. And that mm-hmm. may be different from budgeting if you were a single parent or just, you know, without a spouse or without a significant other. We go over budgeting with that. You know, I try to get every situation, a two-parent household or a two-income household, I should say. So we go over that kind of financial planning. We also go over how to get a mortgage or how to get a loan for a car. So, I mean, we really hit everything. And I think that's what keeps the class so engaged.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, you know, for the listeners who might be thinking, hey, wait, what is the difference between budgeting if I have a partner or if I'm a single parent, you know, what are the differences that you would recommend that they keep in mind while budgeting in the real world?
Yeah, and it's a lot of people might say, oh, that's easy for you to say, but you really have to live within your means, like I said earlier. So if you're out on your own and you just have a single income, you're going to want to find a situation where your rent is not, you're not paying the entire rent. You know, if you're lucky enough to have a parent that'll take you in or a friend that you can split the rent with, that's helpful. Of course, there's government assistance. So we actually do go over how to acquire different grants and different loans, and that's related to the whole thing. But of course, that would be different in terms of budgeting with two incomes at the same time. The idea remains the same, though. Regardless, you have to live within your means, because a lot of two-income households, they find themselves in debt as well.
Yeah. So what's one financial tip that you would give your younger self who might not have been as financially savvy as you are now?
The biggest thing that I would say is to invest early, invest often. It's hard to stick to it, though. I remember starting my 401k at my previous job and putting money away, and then starting an investment account and doing the same thing. But after a while, I just stopped. So I think it's important to have recurring payments to your investments account. So every 2 weeks before you start spending money, having maybe 10% of your check go to different investment accounts. And I think that's not a number. It might seem like a big number, but it's a number you can adjust to if 10% of your income goes elsewhere. And I was just looking at the S&P 500 when I graduated high school. So in 2005, it was at around 1200, and now it is at around 4900. So,
wow.
I'm sorry, 3900. So, but it regardless,
still.
regardless, if you put money away and the market goes up 0%, you're still putting money away. It's the idea of putting money away, and it's money you're not spending.
Yeah, and it's a great habit to get into.
Exactly.
So I think the financial literacy course, especially being a mandatory ninth grade course, is reason enough for parents who are listening to at least consider Delta Academy, because, you know, as we mentioned, a lot of schools do not cover this kind of topic. And sounds like you're giving a very comprehensive education around finances that's so crucial for kids that age. But where could listeners go to find out more information about Delta Academy, and not just the financial literacy course, but the other programs that you offer and what makes it a great school? Because, you know, we're coming up on the end of this year, so maybe for next year, they might want to look into putting their students at Delta Academy.
Yeah, the best thing to do would be to go to our website, and there's all sorts of contact information. It's deltaacademylv.com. You can email me, richard.chippin@deltaacademylv.com. I'm not the person that accepts you into the school or anything, but I can get you in contact with the right people as well. Mm-hmm. If you're lost with the website, we're a great school. It's the only teaching job I've ever had, and for as long as they'll have me, this is where I'm going to be. So I love the school. The atmosphere is great. We have small classrooms, and that's small in terms of amount of students in my classrooms. So I'll have a class of 12 or I'll have a class of 10, and I can really dedicate time to each student, which I find to be very important.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so once again, the website is deltaacademylv.com, deltaacademylv.com, or you can email Richard directly, richard.shippin, that's S-H-I-P-I-N, at deltaacademylv.com, richard.shippin@deltaacademylv.com. And where is, I know you said there's online options as well, but where's the physical school located? North Las Vegas, but what intersection?
So the main, Martin Luther King and Cheyenne, would be the big cross streets, but we're about a block away from that. We're on Brooks and, or just around that area.
Okay, awesome. So MLK and Cheyenne is the area, but they also have online options if you don't happen to live in that area. And charter schools are open to anyone in the Valley, right?
Yeah, and there are some specifics that go into it that honestly, I don't know everything about, but...
But it's not like zoned like a regular CCSD
correct.
School.
I have students from Henderson, and I have students from all over.
Nice. Okay. So once again, the website is deltaacademylv.com. If you want to find out more, deltaacademylv.com. And Richard, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know about this very important topic. It sounds like a really great course that the students are probably getting a lot out of. Even if they don't appreciate it now, they will appreciate it in the future. So I appreciate you being here and giving us the financial tips as well as letting us know what you're doing there at Delta Academy. So thank you.
No problem. It's something I enjoy talking about. So yeah, thanks for having me.
When a student lacks basic needs like food, clothing, and learning materials, attending school can be a challenge.
And that can make it impossible to thrive.
At Communities in Schools, we address this issue by ensuring that students have everything they need to re-engage in learning,
access to technology and school supplies,
and even emotional support.
By bringing communities of support to students, we're achieving equitable learning conditions.
And that's what Communities in Schools is all about.
Learn more at communitiesinschools.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Stephanie Glanzer, Senior Vice President of MGM Resorts International and co-chair of the Meetings Mean Business Coalition. Stephanie has been with MGM Resorts International since 1998, and she's responsible for the company's overall leisure and group sales strategy and operations. She and her team oversee and manage more than 4 million square feet of meeting and convention space in Las Vegas and throughout the U.S. Stephanie, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So as American businesses build back up from the pandemic, what part do business meetings and conventions play in employee and company growth?
Well, I think they play a major engagement. And if that isn't anything that we haven't especially learned over the past 3 years of being forced to do things virtually, as businesses have come back, we actually have seen not just the ROI on the business itself from education to sales, but even from an attendee standpoint, where the real power happens is during the networking or when someone is face to face. So again, unfortunately, as an industry, we had to learn the very hard way that the true value of face to face is when meetings happen.
In what ways specifically do these in-person meetings and conventions benefit employees and businesses? Like, how does it take communication to the next level?
I think that communication, well, first of all, through many studies, including a recent Oxford Economic study that, you know, U.S. companies will experience about a $5.90 return in revenue when spent on business travel and doing face-to-face meetings. And unfortunately, sometimes businesses, when they do cut travel and face-to-face, it is things like training or sales or education that is seen in drastic reduction from those things not happening. So the actual private entities, not just private entities and corporations, but also associations and trade, and this impacts all industries from manufacturing, technology, education, associations, et cetera, where they can have an impact if face-to-face does not happen.
Okay. Now, I understand that when you are sitting in the room with someone, it's a completely different energy, and there's a certain synergy happening that doesn't necessarily happen when you're in completely different cities, different parts of the country, and communicating virtually. But as far as the education and training goes, you know, a lot of education and training is one-to-many. It doesn't require that one-to-one interaction. So what do you say to people who say that virtually that is just as effective as it is being in the same room?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think that, you know, there are many different types of training and education. From an attention standpoint, yes, while we all like to believe that we are focused on our computer screen for that 30-minute, 45-minute, 6-hour training session, it just isn't the same when it is related to an experience of training. So if you're actually going to a conference and you are going to a training program, to be able to have a schedule and experiential program where you are going in and out of your training, you're stepping out, you're taking scheduled breaks, you're coming back refreshed, and more importantly, after the training is done, you are with counterparts and colleagues actually talking about that training or networking and learning something new for the future. So unbelievable, measurable benefits when that training is done in person.
Okay, interesting. Now, if we start adding up the travel and the room rental costs, it seems like virtual meetings are not only sometimes easier, but also could cost significantly less than in-person meetings or in-person conventions and seminars. So what's the tipping point where the benefits outweigh the drawbacks?
I'll answer that in a couple of different ways. First of all, I think that the tipping point is when the education isn't being met by the learner in order to carry those things that are being taken through the education. So again, going back to far more positive impact on face-to-face and effective versus doing it virtually, I would also then flip it to say that when what those meetings and events and training are doing to not just the cities and the businesses of where they are meeting, but in to the overall U.S. economy. So, for example, in 2022, travel and events were about $100 billion spend that were related directly back to U.S. economy impact and just over 600,000 jobs. So when you think about the impact that education and meetings and face-to-face are having, not just on the companies that are having them and the people that are attending, but also to the communities and the overall environment.
So are there any instances where it would be better to just stick to virtual and not try to do in-person meetings?
There could certainly be times that virtual would make sense. However, again, the impact is far greater on the face-to-face. There are also, you know, when we talk about corporate meetings and sales meetings, the only part of virtual that has a strong ROI is when you have the face-to-face meetings. And then again, you can use that content for later or even for individuals from a marketing standpoint that may not have been to that meeting. But in everything that we have measured and learned, is face-to-face is far more valuable.
Okay, cool. Now, as I mentioned in the opening, you're the Senior Vice President of MGM Resorts International, and we all know what MGM Resorts International is, of course, in Las Vegas here, but you're also co-chair of the Meetings Mean Business Coalition, and I don't think listeners are quite as familiar with that. So what exactly is the Meetings Mean Business Coalition?
Sure. U.S. Travel, which is, again, the group advocating for travel and business in the United States. We are a coalition that really is an advocacy group that shows, you know, not just on the one day of the year, which is Global Meetings Industry Day, where we celebrate what we do, but really a group of all sides of travel and businesses that meet face-to-face to ensure that those outside of our industry, both public and private, are aware of the benefits of meeting face-to-face. So basically an advocacy group, and really we just want to make sure that whether you're a decision maker that is making decisions, should your company meet face-to-face, from an attendee standpoint, from a public sector standpoint, government standpoint, ensuring that we know that face-to-face meetings matter and that they need to be valued and that they can't be the first things cut when budgets get restricted or are tighter, that really even in a tight economy, face-to-face meetings are a solid investment.
Okay, nice. So where can listeners go if they want to learn more about the benefits of meeting face-to-face? Because we've been able to talk a little bit about it, but if they want to go deeper into the actual data and better understanding of the benefits.
Sure. On the U.S. Travel Association website, there is a meetings needs business page where we can very clearly read many of the statistics, studies, and facts on the value of face-to-face. And then again, specifically on days like Global Meetings Industry Day, where we really are sending out through all social media, meetings means business at the U.S. Travel website, is really, again, our way to promote the importance to learn about why business and events matter at ustravel.org.
Okay, awesome. So once again, if you want to learn more about the benefits of meeting face-to-face, you want to take a look at the data, ustravel.org is the website to go to, ustravel.org. And if you want to learn more about Meetings Mean Business, you can go to meetingsmeanbusiness.com. And Stephanie, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know, because I think a lot of us have just settled into the comfort zone of meeting virtually. And it's time to start thinking about the benefits of getting back out there and meeting face to face. So I appreciate you bringing it to our attention and sharing your expertise with us. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Heather.
We are the 25%. That's a quarter of all Americans, over 61 million people with a disability. And we want a world where everyone is 100% included, just like you. Easter Seals Disability Services. We are the 25.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Today, I'm speaking with David Olivencia, author of the new book, Networking Excellence, Building a Strong, Value-Based Network in an Accelerating Digital World. David is a senior technology executive who's been recognized as a 40 under 40 and Tech 50 by Crain's Detroit Business and one of the most influential Hispanics in America by Hispanic Business Magazine. David, thank you so much for being here today.
It's great to be with you, Heather.
So what prompted you to write Networking Excellence?
Yes, Heather, there's three kind of reasons why I wrote Networking Excellence. The first one is around sharing. I want to share my approach to networking that's helped me reach the executive levels at Fortune 100 companies. I wanted to share all my expertise and my approach around networking that's helped me invest in startups, as well as found national leadership organizations. So the first reason why I wrote the book is sharing. The second one is I want to fulfill demand. If you ask people around what's the top two reasons to accelerate your career and promotional velocity, to find a job, or to more rapidly accomplish your goals, the number one or number two answer, Heather, is going to be networking. But if you look out there, there's minimal to zero books on this or trainings on it, or they don't teach it in schools. So the second area is to fulfill demand. The third area is giving back in the spirit, which is really the spirit of networking, kind of sharing my approach. I've read hundreds of books on this topic, and then I've interviewed 25, 30 people that have really achieved networking excellence. So those are the three reasons why I wrote this book, Heather.
Okay. So what are the key strategies or components that you talk about in the book that we really need if we want to achieve networking excellence?
So there's three fundamental framework components to achieve networking excellence. The first is your foundation. The second is executing off that foundation. And then the third is, once you have those two in place, optimizing around that foundation. So those are the three key areas. Underneath your foundation, Heather, is really deeply understanding yourself. What's your purpose in life? What values do you have? What value do you bring to relationships? What are you good at? What are you bad at? All of those things are around self-assessment. The second part of the foundation is, once you have that, what are the goals and what are your SMART goals that you have that you want to live out? And then, what's the brand that you want to communicate to the world? And how do you power all of those with the right rituals and routines that build a strong foundation? The second is, once you have that foundation, how do you now execute off of that and identify the right people in your network and the right networks? There's hundreds of networks out there, but how do you identify the right ones? And once you identify the right people and networks, how do you give them tremendous value of all the values that you have and value toolkit that you have so that they can be successful? So that's about executing. The third area is about optimization. And then how do you, when you look at networking events, what do you do before the event? What do you do during the event, networking events and after? And are you even attending the right networking events? So there's the work there and the component there around networking events. And then the last part of optimization is around social media. And, you know, Heather, we live in this world that's becoming more digital, more tech-driven every day, but social gives you so many opportunities to connect with new people in your network, but also give them tons of value. But if you don't have the right foundation, you know, you can be all over the place on social media. So those are the three key components, Heather, of networking excellence and those who achieve networking excellence.
Okay, perfect. Now, one of the things you mentioned under the executing category was identifying the right people and networks. Can you just give us a little brief nutshell version of how we could identify the right people and networks to be networking with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So with your foundation, you're going to understand what your goals are and what you're good at and what value you bring. And based on the goals that you have, you know, the great thing about networking, we can network with the world, but we don't have unlimited time. So with our goals in place, for each of our goals, we should identify who are the right people that can help us accomplish our goals and make us successful. And those could be people that, you know, are connected to different people or organizations or people that can educate you and you can learn about a certain topic. But really spending the time looking at each goal and saying, hey, for this goal, you know, these are the 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, whatever the number is that can help me. And once you identify those people per goal that you have, how do you connect with them and help them be tremendously successful? And it's also stepping back and saying, and studying that person and saying, well, what is it that they want to accomplish? What are their goals in life? And how are the strengths and the value and the toolkit that I have can help that person be successful? So that's a little bit more about what I talk about in the book and how you identify and add tremendous value to those in your network.
Okay. And then under the optimizing category, you mentioned networking events and social media, and I'm pretty sure all of the listeners are involved in at least one or the other, if not both of those things. What tips do you have to help them optimize those areas?
Yeah. So if we just look at networking events, the first thing is there's there's hundreds and thousands of people there's hundreds and thousands of networks. So the first thing is making sure that you have the right foundation so that you're a part of the right networks or the right networking event. Then it's the three kind of what do you do before the event, during the event, and after the event. So, and the before the event, it's like, well, do I know who's going to be there? And are there things that I could do to potentially connect with people before the event? And when I connect, it's value-based. So it's around how do I help? What are the things that I can do to help this person be successful? So connecting before the event, right, is kind of a tip. During the event, in my book, I lay out probably a good 50 or so different tips that you can do during an event. But a couple quick ones are have an open posture. Don't be looking at your phone. Find commonality. Connect people. Have a 5-second pitch, a 50-second pitch, a 5-minute pitch of what you do and the value you can bring to somebody. And then be open and be, you know, bring other people in are just a couple of the tips that I have there. And then after the event, following up, a lot of people forget to follow up. So you'll meet great people at a networking event. And how do you follow up with value and how you can help them be successful? And also thank the team who put on the event because they've brought so much value to everybody who was at the event. So those are some of the points around networking event. And you know, I can jump into social media, but I don't know if you had any questions, Heather, on the networking event before I jump into social media.
Well, the only question I have on the networking events is, what if someone is shy or introverted and those types of events just scare them?
Yeah, that is common. So in my book, I lay out what are the techniques and tools that you can use to help minimize that. Right. And a lot of it is if you understand the value that you can bring to any relationship and you've prepped before and you understand who's there and you reach out in advance and you have a bit of confidence in the value that you can bring. And you use tips like, you know, how do you find commonality? How do you connect with somebody? How do you smile? It minimizes that. And you can actually find that these are a lot of fun. And you're also at this event because you realize how it's aligned to your goals and what you want to accomplish. And you know that, hey, because I'm at this event, I'm going to more rapidly accomplish the goal. So it helps minimize and should make networking events more fun and approachable.
Okay, perfect. And then what about tips for social media, which is basically a virtual networking event, if you will?
Yes. So you have to have the right foundation. Right, you have to know what you believe in and what your goals are and what your brand is. A lot of people, I'd say most people, they shoot from the hip. They're posting about different things all the time, and you don't know what they are and who they stand for. So that's one. You need to have that strong foundation. The second is then you should communicate with value around your brand and what you believe in. Because it acts as a magnet for your network and people that want to connect with you and bring value to you. But also on the other side, they say, wow, this, you know, I really understand what David, in my case, me, what David stands for. And wow, he's giving value in an area that he cares about. And it's an authentic way to create that attraction. But you want to treat it as a vehicle that the strengths that you have, the values you have, as a channel to communicate that value to a broad network. So those would be the, you know, just a couple of tips. And there's tips on LinkedIn and how you, you know, follow the people in your network, add value to the people in your network, stay engaged with them in a social media as well. But lots of other tips on social media, but those are a few, Heather.
Okay, perfect. Now, since these are the same strategies that helped you climb the corporate ladder, where can listeners go if they want to learn more about these networking techniques or even to get the book, Networking Excellence, Building a Strong Value-Based Network in an Accelerating Digital World?
Yes, Heather. Well, they can find the book anywhere where you can pick up, find books on Amazon. I'm a hot new bestseller and a bestseller in a couple different categories. I can be followed on LinkedIn at David Olivencia, where I post a lot of content around networking and networks and how you can be successful. On Facebook, I'm on D Olivencia, and Facebook and Twitter is D Olivencia. And yeah, so those are some of the places that you can find the book and also follow me on social media to learn more about how to accomplish networking excellence.
Okay, awesome. So the book, once again, is called Networking Excellence, Building a Strong Value-Based Network in an Accelerating Digital World by David Olivencia. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it on various booksellers. Or if you want to follow David on social media, on LinkedIn, it's at David Olivencia. Facebook and Twitter, it's at D Olivencia. And David, I want to thank you so much for being here, sharing some of your strategies, your tips and techniques for networking excellence, and as well as sharing, your insight beyond the surface level stuff that we normally hear. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Every child deserves a safe, loving, and permanent home. Help the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption find families for children who've lingered in foster care the longest. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Neely Green, Director of National and Local Marketing at Tractor Supply, and she has some baby chicks with her as well. Trends like rural revitalization, sustainability, and a longing for self-reliance are contributing to greater interest around backyard poultry. Over the past 3 years, Tractor Supply's live poultry business has more than doubled. Neely, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, great. Thank you for having me.
So why do people want to have backyard chickens?
Well, there are so many reasons. Certainly the benefits of having eggs really can't be overstated. There's such a great convenience to be able to go out to the coop, such a sense of satisfaction that they're coming from your own flock, and the taste, I mean, really, you can't compare it to the taste of eggs in the grocery store. It's just fabulous. It's a great activity to do if you have children with your, as a family. Great way to teach them responsibility and get them outside at the same time. And then finally, chickens are, they're just a lot of fun. People don't realize they have such distinct personalities, and they really come in all shapes, sizes, and colors. For a lot of people, it's not even about the eggs. It's about the companionship and being able to have your own flock, watch it grow, and just, see how they interact with each other and with you.
Nice. Okay. So generally speaking, what are the regulations around having backyard chickens?
So it really depends on local areas. I would definitely recommend going to your local government's website to check for any restrictions on backyard flocks. There are some areas where you can have a backyard flock, but they prohibit roosters. So it is important to look at that. Also, local chicken groups, those can be a great, way of reaching out to fellow chicken owners and just find out, what are the rules for your particular area.
Okay. And I did do a little bit of research into that for the Las Vegas Valley area. And at least as of a few years ago, I'd still recommend checking now. But as of a few years ago in Clark County, if you don't live in one of the cities, you can have a maximum of 3 roosters, but no roosters in the city of Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, or Henderson. So Neely, would we need a rooster? Do we have to have a rooster?
You do not. You do not. That's actually a really common question. You do not need to have a rooster in order to have eggs. Roosters are great. If you want to be able to hatch chicks from your eggs, you would need a rooster then. And also, if you have free range chickens, they're great for protection. But if you're just keeping a backyard flock for eggs, you do not need one.
And how many chickens does it make sense to have in a flock?
Well, chickens are flock animals, so you definitely want to have more than one. At Tractor Supply, we sell a minimum of 4 chicks. And so just, you know, to ensure that they have that flock dynamic. But yeah, I mean, it can be small, but you want to have at least 4.
Okay. And how much time does it take to care for 4 chickens?
So the time to care for them, really, it's checking in on them a couple of times a day, putting them up, letting them out, making sure they have their fresh food and water. People can really go nuts with it. Mm-hmm. It takes about 6 months for a chick to be able to start laying eggs. So there is that care time before you start getting those eggs.
Okay. And obviously, they're going to need some kind of chicken coop or something in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So to get started, everything you need, I've brought a lot of the essentials here. Very important with chicks to have someplace warm for them to stay. This is a brooder. I like to use a stock tank, which I got at Tractor Supply. Also fresh food, fresh water, and a heat lamp or some heat source to keep them warm. And in a few weeks, you will need a coop.
Okay. And obviously in Las Vegas, it gets hot in the summer. So what do we do about the summer heat? And what else do chickens need to thrive throughout the year?
Absolutely. So there are definitely some breeds that are more heat tolerant than others. So in an area like yours, it is important to do some research on what breeds would really do well in your environment. For example, a Brahma, maybe not a match for Las Vegas. But things that you can do is make sure that you have a well-ventilated coop. Also, ice treats. You know, there are lots of ways to just give your chicken the ability to stay a little bit cooler during the summer, fans, all of that.
Okay. Now, for city dwellers or suburban dwellers who aren't farmers and didn't grow up on a farm, this can seem like a really big step. It's like, am I turning into a farmer now? So where can we turn for support and education if we're going to take on this kind of endeavor?
Yeah. So first thing I would say is you're not alone. I was a complete novice when I started, but tractorsupply.com has a lot of wonderful information, articles about chick care, chicken health, lots of an extended assortment of everything that you need. And then also you can even order chicks online. For me, I found the most value in going to our stores and talking with our team members there. A lot of them are poultry owners themselves, and they are more than happy to talk through any questions that you have. Especially when I was starting out, it was a great source of information to talk to someone who's actually doing it, and also a great sense of reassurance that I was up to the challenge.
Okay, so we do have a couple of Tractor Supply stores in Las Vegas. If people go there to the store, do you have live chicks available that day?
We do. So we have chick days going on in our stores where we have live chicks that people can purchase. Stock may vary. Poultry is very popular right now, so you may need to check your store. But yes, we have chicks that you can purchase in store.
And this might be a dumb question, but are chicks hatched all year round or is it a seasonal thing?
Chicks are hatched all year round. You can purchase them online all year round. We do only carry them in the stores during the warmer months, beginning of spring through October.
Okay. So where can people find out more information about raising chickens in their yard or find out where the nearest Tractor Supply store is if they want to go to a store?
Absolutely. Well, tractorsupply.com, first place I would go for all the information that's there. Talk to team members and really just talk to other poultry owners in your community. It's a great hobby. I find that people love to talk about their chickens. So it should not be a challenge to get information if you start looking.
Okay, awesome. So tractorsupply.com, once again, is a great place to start. Tractorsupply.com, they do have chicks at the stores during the chick days, and there are 2 in Las Vegas and a few in surrounding areas as well. So tractorsupply.com, and you can also find out information there and seek out, you know, groups on Facebook and stuff. Find other people raising backyard chickens. Sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks so much, Neely. I appreciate you being here.
Great, thank you.
And thanks to the chicks.
Every 36 seconds, a vehicle is stolen in the United States. Cars are an important investment, and you have the power to protect it. Remove valuables from your car or place out of view. Roll up your windows completely. Don't leave your car running while unattended, especially during the winter. And always lock your doors and take your keys or fob with you. If you know something about a vehicle theft, call us at 1-800-TEL-NICB.
This is a public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm speaking with James Bell, head of corporate communications at Kia America. Electric vehicles are gaining popularity, but many consumers still have questions on whether or not EVs are right for them. James, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
What's the first thing that you'd like consumers to know about electric vehicles?
I think the first thing is just to know that their driving habits, you know, how we're using your particular vehicle is probably a better match for electrified transport than you imagine. Most Americans drive about 28 miles per day. Our least expensive Kia EV today has close to 300 miles of range. So that's meaning that, you know, you're driving, you know, better part of a week, if not longer, before you even consider charging the car. And I think that's one of the misconceptions, the idea that I need to always have charging nearby. It's similar to how you treat your phone. You charge it, you know, when you go to bed, you attach the cord to it, you wake up, you're ready for your day. It's the same thing with electrified transportation, and it really reduces a lot of the stress in life. How many times have we, you know, arrived home, you know, you have an appointment tomorrow morning, you look at the gas gauge and you think, oh, well, I'll get gas in the morning. And then your morning is running late, you can't find your car keys, the dog gets outside, whatever the case may be. By the time you jump in the car and start your day, you think, ah, and now I have to go to the gas station. With an electric car, that whole issue is washed away. And so I think it really is a matter of looking at your personal life, how you're using your car, what kind of commuting, what kind of picking the kids up at school, what kind of errands are you running. When you really are honest with yourself, I think you'll find electrified transportation is the easiest and best way to go.
Okay. Now, that is definitely some good news there, but a lot of people still do have range anxiety. Now, you mentioned 300 miles on one charge, which is excellent. I mean, obviously, most people, that would last for several days at least, if not a week, but they still have that in the back of their mind that, especially if they don't have at-home charging capabilities, but in the back of their mind, it's always, what if I run out? What if I run out? What if my charge goes down? What if my battery just dies? So how extensive is the charging network now where they can, you know, stop off and recharge?
Well, you know, I think it's a fascinating question, and it really kind of pays to mention that we are in a transitional phase, not unlike what we saw between horse-drawn carriages and the early combustion gasoline-powered cars 100 plus years ago. It wasn't that in that time, suddenly there was a gas station on every corner. In fact, a friend was reading a book recently and he told me that in New York City, if you had one of the early cars and you needed gasoline, you either had to go to the local pharmacy or to the farm supply store and you could only buy it a gallon at a time. So guess what? There was range anxiety back then too. Yeah. I think the difference being is that with technology today and the amount of investment we're seeing from petroleum companies and the automotive companies, supported also through government incentives, you're seeing a much quicker rush to getting charging networks built up all around the country, especially along arteries connecting different cities. So it will take some time. We're not going to see suddenly charging stations on every street corner the way you see gasoline stations, but it will come. We are in the early days of a transition, which is coming. There's no going back. Because as I said, when you really spend time with an electrified vehicle, you realize just how much better they really are and how easier they are into your life.
What about the complaint, which is the complaint I hear the most often, which is that charging takes a lot of time, but filling up a tank takes just a few minutes?
Wow, that's a great question. So in Kia EVs, we have a system called high-speed charging. Essentially, when connected to a level 3 charging unit, which is again, growing in popularity and prevalence all around the country, you can go from 10% state of charge to over 80%. So let's say in a vehicle that has 300 miles of range, that's what, 220, 230 miles of range charged up in that amount of time in about 10 minutes. Now, I would like you next time and all your listeners, next time you go to the gas station to set a stopwatch. You will see that it takes a good 10 to 12 minutes that you're in the gas station for filling up. You know, you attach the nozzle. Sometimes the fuel that comes out is slower than others. So that can take some time. You attach the nozzle, you clean your windows, you go into the station, you buy a bottle of Gatorade, maybe you go to the restroom, you go back, you look at your phone and check email. Oh, now the refueling's done. I'm on my way. It's not a 2-minute job. And I think that's one of the interesting things. A lot of EV naysayers have pointed it out, like, oh, it takes so long.
Yeah.
Again, time yourself next time you're at the gas station. It's going to be very, very similar to what you're going to do for EV charging as well.
Yeah, a lot of them think it's going to take 8 hours. Well, that's the slow charge.
And that's what you'll do at your home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the overnight charge, right?
Overnight. Right, exactly.
Now, some naysayers are also saying that the drain on the power system from EVs is more destructive to the environment than fossil fuels. So what's the truth behind that argument?
I just don't understand.
That's
me
neither.
The easiest way to say.
I don't either.
That is just it's a complete false argument. I don't have an answer for it because it just makes no sense. There's just no rhyme or reason to that. It's interesting, though, it's become somewhat political, the adoption and the interest in electrified transportation. You talk about, people say, well, I mean, all the fuel that's used to build the cars. Well, guess what? Gasoline-powered cars use a lot of fuel in the production of them as well.
Right.
Plus, then they use fuel to drive down the road in the future. So every industry uses energy to produce the product that it makes. In the case of electrified vehicles, though, you're done with fuel as soon as you take delivery of the car. And so why people say it's an extra drag on the infrastructure, it's illogical. That's the only thing I can say.
Okay, good. Thanks for setting that straight. All right. Now, where can listeners go if they want more information about electric vehicles and they can make the decision whether it's right for them? Which I do have to say, Las Vegas in particular is an excellent place to have an EV, relatively small area, lots of stop and go. It's a perfect place. But where do they go for more information?
Well said, and you're absolutely right. A great place to go, it would be to Kia.com. We have a special section there where you can plug in the particulars on your family, your driving habits, your needs, and it'll actually help you match to the best electric vehicle, obviously in Kia's market, but then also give you a sense of what kind of specification you might be looking for any EV. So Kia.com is a great place to start.
Awesome. Okay. So all the manufacturers pretty much have EVs now, but if you're interested in Kia EVs, which Kia makes some great EVs, go to Kia.com, use the tool, figure out what they have. And James, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing your expertise, letting people know more about EVs and how they can definitely realistically fit into our lives, even for people who might have been hesitant about it. We're on the cusp, as you mentioned, and it's definitely time. So thank you for your time and your expertise.
I'll just say a silly cliche. The switch has been flipped. We're going that direction. So it's worth taking a look.
That's awesome. Thanks.
This is Brad Keselowski, driver number 2, discount tire Ford Mustang. Ever wonder what gives me a winning edge? A quick pit stop to check your tires can go a long way. Whether you're driving on the track or just on the road. Properly maintained tires handle better in all weather conditions and provide you with the safe stopping power. Do a safety check on your tread depth at home or go online and book a tire inspection appointment.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. It's tax season, and the AARP Foundation, which is AARP's charitable affiliate that serves both members and non-members, is providing free in-person and virtual tax assistance and preparation through their Tax Aid program from now until April 18th. It's focused on people over 50, but anyone can use the free services. Find out more or book your appointment at aarpfoundation.org/taxaid. That's TAXAIDE, aarpfoundation.org/taxaid. Chef Pete Gioni is running a 10-week Cooking for a Cure fundraising campaign with a goal of raising $100,000 over those 10 weeks to support the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. You can donate at the various partner restaurants or directly through his website from April 12th to June 10th. Find out more, learn about healthy eating for cancer patients, see the list of participating restaurants, or make a donation at cookingforacure.com. That's cookingforacure.com. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, April 17th at 8 p.m. benefiting Shania Kids Can, and Monday, May 8th at 8 p.m. benefiting NLS, Nevada Legal Services. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. Also coming up is the 4th annual Monday's Dark 5K Cowbell Jammer on Sunday, April 30th, with check-in at 8 a.m., group warm-up at 8:30, and fun run at 9 a.m. at True Fusion Eastern. This 5K supports many of the incredible local organizations that Monday's Dark has partnered with, and you get to choose your benefiting organization when you register. There's also post-race karaoke and, of course, more cowbell. It's sure to be an exciting morning filled with fun to give back to the Vegas community. Register or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The 20th annual Walk with the Heart of a Child to support the Children's Heart Foundation is happening Saturday, April 22nd at Craig Ranch Regional Park, with 9 a.m. registration, 10 a.m. opening ceremonies and walk, and 11 a.m. closing ceremonies. Vendors, community partner booths, Kids Zone, and food trucks will be on site. Find out more or register to walk at chfn.org/walk. That's chfn.org/walk. The Baller Dream Foundation and Circa Resort and Casino are hosting a celebrity poker tournament from April 28th to 30th at Circa Resort and Casino's 60th floor rooftop lounge, the Legacy Club. This three-day celebrity-filled weekend experience is hosted by Hall of Fame pitcher Greg Maddux to benefit young warriors battling cancer. Find out more, get your tickets, donate an item to the silent auction, or sign up to play poker at ballerdream.org/circa. That's ballerdream.org/circa. And Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their Walk for Wishes event on World Wish Day, Saturday, April 29th at Town Square, Las Vegas. Make-A-Wish chapters and affiliates across the globe come together each year to celebrate World Wish Day, the anniversary of the wish that inspired the founding of Make-A-Wish back in 1980. You can join in the celebration of more than 350,000 wishes that have already been granted while raising funds for future wishes. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv. That's wish.org/snv.